A common mistake that I see among young creative business owners is that they are trying to talk to everyone rather than a core group of interested customers. And this can come out in their product creation, their marketing, and even to some extent, the branding for their business. So today we're going to talk about why it's important for you to niche down and to know who your customer really is. Because when you get clear on who you're talking to, it is much easier for you to create, market, and sell your products. Sadie Tepper is my guest today. She's the founder and designer behind 20 Some Design. It's a lady-powered feminist stationery gift brand. Sadie's design background enables her to create bright and colorful hand-lettered designs that empower and inspire others to spread a message of positive change while still encompassing some wit and feminist fun. Sadie is also a Paper Camp alum and a Proof to Product Labs member. On today's episode, we're talking about how Sadie niched down in her business and why it is important that you do too. She provides ideas and examples of niches that you may want to explore and strategies for how to reach your ideal audience once you've honed in on that niche. We also talk about fears and concerns that may be holding creatives back from niching down and how to push through these. Today's episode is brought to you by Proof to Product Labs, my 12-month group coaching program that was built specifically for product-based business owners who want to streamline their systems and scale their revenue. Next quarter inside of Labs, we'll be mapping out a 90-day marketing plan that you can rinse and repeat and reuse every quarter. It's going to be good. So to learn more, head to prooftoproduct.com/labs. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/labs. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. I'm on a mission to empower product-based business owners to confidently grow their revenue in their own way and at their own pace. Here at Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies, find inspiration, and action steps to help you start, streamline, and scale your product-based business. So grab your favorite notebook to take notes and let's get started. Hey, Sadie, welcome to Proof to Product.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
I am so happy to have you here and to discuss today's topic of having a cohesive product line and, more importantly, knowing who your customer is so that you can design for them. Is it okay if I kick this off by reading a part of the email pitch you sent to me? Because I think it really sets the stage well.
Please go ahead. All right. Love to hear it.
So Sadie wrote to me and she said, I've come to realize that knowing who you are designing, creating for is so darn important. Whereas many in our community are purely artists and they create to create, but don't understand why people do or don't buy. I cannot stress how important it is to have some sort of niche and to know who you are selling to and why they should buy your product. Sadie, this wraps up pretty much everything I want to talk about today, because it's about knowing who you are as a designer and artist, knowing who your audience is and why they should be buying from you. So tell me more. How did you come to this realization and why do you think this is so important?
Well, finding your community. I mean, if you don't sell to someone, you sell to no one. And that's a common refrain in marketing and business. And so finding who you're selling to is so darn important. So when I first started out, I honestly wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do either, as a lot of us. And I kept designing a lot of different things and it kind of didn't stick. You're kind of throwing a bunch of things against the wall and if you don't know what you want to make, then no one knows what to buy. So as I evolved, I actually started with a project. So the reason, this is kind of a long backstory, but the reason my company is called 20 Some Design is when I first started, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So as I started as a project to create series of 20 designs. So I did like 20 icons, 20 logos, 20 web pages, whatever it was. And I was really all over the board. And I started gravitating towards stickers and I started gravitating towards feminist things. And I started gravitating towards hand lettering. And so every month I like took on a different project and it probably took me close to a year to really like hone in on what it was I wanted to do. But forcing myself to explore is kind of what helped me like just see what I was creating and see as an artist, like what I wanted to be doing. So that's kind of how I got where I was. I didn't start out like with a straight idea, I, you know, meandered my way there.
That's amazing. And I love how you created a project for yourself to, in essence, hone in on your art style, hone in on who you were talking to. And you said it took a year of that for you to kind of.
Yeah, I think it was like, it was like 9 months to a year, because I did a different like series of 20 every month. And I think I did like 10 or 12 of them before I even got to something that was feminist and even got to something hand lettered. So yeah, it took a while.
And when you say got to it, was that more of you thinking, yes, this is what I want to be doing. I'm excited about this. I'm passionate about this. The ideas are flowing, or I should say, was it because that's what your customers were resonating with too?
I think it was a little of both. It was finally doing something I was excited about. And then I think that my customers could tell, because it finally had a very cohesive look and feel and message. And I started listing stuff online and it just started selling fast because people like really resonated with people. Yeah. So I think it was a little bit of both.
I love that this conversation is happening today, because yesterday in our labs program, we had a panel about product development, and it came up multiple times about how when we are personally excited about the things that we're creating, that comes through not only in the art or the design of the product that we're creating, but also in the way we market it, the way we sell it, the way we talk about it in our catalogs or our website or our social or whatever it is. And so it's a nice reassurance to hear you say the same thing as well.
Yeah, that's so true. You can't sell something you're not passionate about. It's just, it's hard to do.
Right. I know. So talk to me about niches. What can this look like for different product types or different, different types of makers? Do you have any examples that you could share?
Yeah. So I like to think about it as like, tell me what makes your product special. And if your answer is, oh, it's cute, it's funny, then like that might be true, but like that's not good enough. Like you have to go deeper. And so for me, like mine is definitely value-based. Like it's my values, it's what I believe in, and it's what other people believe in. But that like absolutely does not have to be the case. So some really easy ways that I see other people doing this is a love for a certain hobby. So that could be something like plants or camping or books or cooking or something like that. So you're really focusing all of your art and designs around a certain subject that people really enjoy. It could be something location-based, like you're just designing Midwest themed things. I say the Midwest because that's where I live. It could be things like just national parks, just beachy attire for, you know, people who love those regions. And then that also helps in the sense that like, you know where to sell, you know where those regions are.
Yeah.
It could be something cultural where you're aiming at a specific cultural group that you identify with because you might have similar values or inside jokes or like traditions growing up that not everybody understands. So it's maybe think of it like as like inside jokes, but like you're inside the club. It could also be a voice for an unrepresented or underrepresented group. And I don't necessarily mean like in life, but I just mean like in that product. So for greeting cards, like there are companies that just target at like older people or just target at mothers. And those people are well represented in the big population of the world, but maybe not well represented like in that product category. So like there's a big open space for them. Mm-hmm. And so all these things can apply to cards, to art, to things like candles. Like there's candle companies that do location specific things. There's candle companies that make book candles. I mean, you can't really make a candle smell like a book, but it's like targeting in on that like concept and, you know, resonating with people. So basically you just have to find a way that really like resonates and strikes an emotional chord with people.
Yeah.
So when people see my stuff, they're like, oh my God, I agree. I feel the same way. But that can be an emotional connection of like, oh my gosh, I love doing that too. Or like, I love visiting that place or, you know, whatever it might be.
Do you think that your feminist work, for example, could be polarizing? Some people agree with you, some people don't. Do you feel like that is a benefit or a hindrance?
I see it as a benefit because, I mean, yeah, there are people who love me and there are people who hate me. And there isn't usually a ton of in between, but I'm selling to the people who love me. And I mean, you can't please everyone. And so you're better off, in my opinion, having a really, really strong connection to a group of people than having a mediocrely strong connection to a lot of people. Because, I mean, in reality, only so many people are going to be your customers. So you'd rather connect with them as strongly as possible. Because as much as we want to say like our art is for everyone, everyone's going to buy my stuff, like unless you're selling milk, like that's not true. Like, and even that is not for everyone. So, you know, you definitely have to like pick a category and lean in really hard.
I think you're right. It almost creates a filter, if you will, of we want to reach the people that are going to resonate with our products most, and we want to reach them quickly. And if that means turning people off from what we're doing, that's okay too. Because as you said, our work isn't always for everyone. And that's a tough realization, I think, whether you're a product business or a service business, recognizing that the way you create product or the way you sell your services or whatever you're doing, it's not going to be for everyone. And so,
And I think it's also sometimes you have to realize that it might not even necessarily be for you. So like in my instance, like my product, like I am also the buyer for my product. Like that's just kind of the way it works out, but that might not always be the case. I mean, you might really enjoy creating something that might be a price point higher than you could afford, you know? So you might be creating something for someone that isn't you, and that's totally okay too. So you just have to, I think, recognize that and be able to like put that in a separate bucket, just knowing that.
Yeah. That would be hard to do though. I feel like.
Yeah. I guess I wouldn't say like different values than what you agree with,
but
like maybe more things like, like a price point that's not quite, I mean, what you personally could afford, or
that's a good
point.
Like,
something less personal in that sense, but
you mentioned a lot of different niches and ways that we could, I don't even know how to say that word. Is it niche? Is it niche? I don't know, but
people say it both ways.
I'm going to probably bounce back and forth. So I hope it doesn't offend anyone, but you've talked to us a lot about a lot of different niches and things that we could look to when we're creating our product line. And we talked to you about, attracting the right audience, but do you have any other suggestions for how we can make that niche really resonate with the people we're trying to reach?
Yeah. So another thing that I hear a lot is people who are like amazing illustrators, and they're like very much artists in that sense. And they might have a really specific look, but that's still like, how does that actually connect you to someone? So the way I like to think about it is like, how can you strike an emotional chord? Like how can you hit on someone's heartstrings? And so some other examples of that, I think, so like, let's say you love drawing flowers. How do you connect flowers to someone personally? Well, maybe you draw the like wedding bouquets, and that might connect, say, oh, I walked down the aisle holding these flowers. Like that creates a really personal, like emotional reaction. And so they might be more inclined to buy your product. Let's say you like doing more pop culture or game. You might wind up creating something that was like a toy that someone had as a kid. And so that's going to like connect to them in another way. And so you just have to think about like how these things are going to connect to people. So something like food, maybe it's a traditional holiday meal or something you ate growing up. So like in that same way, it's going to connect to someone. It's more than just, drawing a pineapple, unless the pineapple is your thing, but you got to like find those ways to connect. Animals, they look like people's pets. Like if you see a dog card that is that weird breed, wearing sunglasses like your dog does, like you're going to buy that because you have to have it. Yeah. If you like drawing people, that means make sure that people can see themselves in that image. And that doesn't mean that like it has to look like them verbatim, but just similar clothing or similar styles. And so into that, you need to know like, who is that customer? If you like nature, it's famous places people go, places they went with their family, places they want to go.
You're right. It's about evoking the memories, the emotion, the connectivity amongst ourselves as people first.
Yeah. Because really, when we think about it, like none of our products, cards, candles, they're gifts. I mean, none of them are necessary. They're all like bonus products in our lives. And so no one has to buy it. Like, yeah, it might be your friend's birthday, but you don't have to buy them a card. But if you see that card that's their dog wearing sunglasses, you're like, oh my God, they have to have this. So whatever that is, like you just have to find a way to connect with people. So if you're not sure, I mean, it's a hard thing to do, but the more narrow you get, the more you know who you're selling to.
Absolutely. What are some of the common fears and concerns that you think artists have around niching down? Because you're right, there's a lot of people that are trying to have more of a mass market appeal as they're starting out, and that makes it difficult for them to gain traction. So what do you think some of those concerns and fears are?
So I think the biggest thing is that people always say, well, I like doing so many different things. I don't want to pick one. Well, I mean, that's true. We all do. Maybe you can tie them together. Maybe there's a way that your interests can fit nicely, but it's also very likely they might not. I mean, you might love doing bubblegum pink things and you might doing like black line art, which are both great, but you probably can't combine them. And in reality, your business might have to focus on just one. And I know it sucks to hear that and say that, but that's kind of the reality. Unless you want to have two businesses, I don't recommend, that's chaos. But yes, that doesn't mean you can't integrate them, but you still have to have, you have to have something cohesive. Otherwise, people, like when someone looks at my card, I'm hoping, I think that they can say like, oh, this is 20 some design. And if people can't say that about your work, then they're not, I mean, that doesn't mean it won't sell, but I don't think it'll sell as well because they don't know who, it doesn't have that connection. So I hate to be mean, but sometimes you just got to pick something. Yeah. Another thing I hear a lot is like, well, I don't want to sell out. I don't want to create art to sell. Like, I'm an artist. And that's another sad reality, is that it's not selling out. It's thinking like a business person. And it sucks sometimes to make art for the mass market, to market to people, but that's how you're going to have a viable business. And so some ways that I like to think about that is maybe you make a few products that have more specific mass appeal. And then you also do a few personal things that may or may not sell, because when it comes down to it, a lot of us really, a few of our products are making a good portion of the sales. So if you do have those few, you know, main items, you can also create other fun things in your free time. But the reality is that like just making art might not sell. I mean, there's like, look at even a lot of like famous painters that didn't have any recognition until like years after they died. And now we put them in museums, but you know, while they were alive, nobody cared, which is, I mean, it's sad, but it's true. So you really have to make things that are going to appeal to people, and then, you know, creativity on the side. And well, it's also easy to think, I think a lot of us, you're like, well, I want to be an artist. People are going to buy it. And the reality is we're not selling like hundreds of thousand dollar pieces of art. We're selling like digital art and small things. And so maybe fine artists might have a collector market, but that's just like not the reality of what we're doing here. So, I mean, if you can, power to you, but that's usually not the case, is that people aren't buying art just to buy art. They're buying things that, you know, connect to them.
Yeah. I want to reiterate something you said, because I think it's important. There's our mindset as a business owner, which is what we're talking about here. But there's also our mindset as a creative that likes to create things and likes to explore in a lot of different ways. And you can have both, but I just want to reiterate what you said of when you're designing for your business and your core customers, you have to have that business hat on first and foremost. And you can play and you can do other things, you know, have other creative outlets that may or may not become sellable products. But when you're deciding what goes in that new release, when you're deciding what you're adding to your collection, you really truly have to take a hard look with your business hat on as to, does this speak to my ideal customer? Does it fit with the rest of the line? Is it cohesive with everything else we already sell?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because if it's not, then I mean, it might be fun, but it might not sell.
It's just not going to fit. This also kind of reminds me of a conversation I had with a friend where it was like, you know, we don't have to turn everything we do into a business either. We all have established businesses, but we can also have hobbies that we do just for fun or just for creative spark. So,
well, now that I've turned my hobby into a business, I'm like, oh, well, now I need a new hobby. Like, what's my new hobby going to be? So I'm like out there again, be like, well, now I have to find new things to do that are not, you know, making me money. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, that's just what happens when you turn your hobby into a business.
It's true. It's true. All right. So once a brand has like identified who their core audience is, you know, there's a lot of different ways that we can reach our customers, right? There's a lot of different ways that we can market our products to those people. But I know you had some suggestions on how to kind of find that niche community for your products.
So first of all, once you think you know, write down a bio of your customer. This is really common in marketing practices to literally write down everything, their likes, their income, their clothes, their food, where they go, what they do. I mean, like really, really narrow down just for your own sanity. And if you can't tell me who that person is, then like, I can't tell you that either. Because sometimes we also see people like, well, who are my people? And I'm like, I don't know. I can't tell you that. You have to tell me who your people are. But once you have a very, very clear picture, it makes it easier to find. So on sites like Fair or Etsy, where there's built-in buyers and they're kind of like searching a marketplace. So that's why I'm grouping those two together. People are searching based on keywords. So they probably aren't searching cute birthday card. I mean, they might be, but then also there's going to be 100 million results and they're never going to find you. But if they're searching something more specific, so like, for example, when people search feminist stickers, like I come up on the first page of Etsy. I don't know if I come up on the first page of Fair, but I'm close. But like you're in those top results because it's a much smaller category. Mm-hmm. So you have to really, you know, use those keywords too. And so when you think about it, you also have to think about what people are searching. Like I'm not an SEO expert by any means, but just think about if you were looking for that product, what would you type in and like mm-hmm. use that language? And in a sense, like on those sites, like store owners, they know what their customers want. So, you know, when they see it, they know. On places like social media, like on Instagram, this might be true for TikTok. I'm not a huge TikTok person, but definitely on Instagram. So I interacted. So my brand is feminist. I interacted with people and accounts who followed liberal local politicians, who followed feminist podcasts, who follow nonprofits like Planned Parenthood or Emily's List, authors of feminist books. So these are all people that aren't like already in the stationary world per se, but they have similar interests and values. And so by interacting with them, they would see my brand and go, oh, I like that. Like that fits in. Like I didn't know I needed feminist stationery, but now that I see it, I absolutely need this. So think about like the wings of your audience. Don't go look at other stationery companies or other candle companies. Go look at other people who like what you'd like. So people, if you do outdoorsy stuff, people who actually follow the national park accounts or, you know, whatever that might be. If you like book stuff, go look at people who follow the authors and follow, you know, cafes and bookstores, not necessarily like your exact product. So when you're in person at like craft fairs or trade shows, so the common refrain that us creatives hear is, I'll know it when I see it. And like when you're designing for someone else, you're like, I cannot work with that. It makes you like want to curl up in a ball and cry. But when you're presenting your products at a craft fair or trade show, like people know when they see it, like they know what's for them. And so in that sense, like my brand name, 20-some Design, there's nothing feminist about that. Like nobody would have any clue who I am or what I do, which I mean, that's a whole nother topic if my name should stay or not, but
we can talk about that.
Yeah, that's another one. But for the time being, like I have a big sign that I put up at craft fairs that says feminist gift shop that like hangs in front of my booth. And at trade shows, like I had printed on my booth wall, like feminist and stuff, like, you know, like that, so that from a distance, like people can see who you are and it brings them in. Because as soon as like people might, you know, walk by at a craft fair and they see cards and like, eh, but then they see feminist and like, ooh, stickers, feminist. And they like, you know, hone in because like they know that's something they like. So you really just have to make it obvious for people and like use those keywords or, you know, print out stuff giant. So like I'll have some of my art prints that honestly don't sell that great, but I hang them behind me so that people can see vagina power really big on the wall. And they're like, oh, okay. And they're like, come on in.
What else do they got here? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like putting yourself out there in those kind of ways.
You have worked for some pretty big brands in other industries too, doing product development. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
Yeah, kind of. Probably not anything big enough that you guys have heard of, but
don't dismiss your past experiences, friend. But you have worked in you've worked in other industries where you did product development. And I'm curious about how that experience of working for somebody else and helping to develop their products have impacted the way you design and develop your products within your brand as a business owner now.
It's always customer first. That's the way that we're always thinking. Is what is the, I mean, the customer being like the client, the customer, same thing. If we're working for a big company, they're still thinking about their customers. So it's what works for them. I mean, even like when I've designed things like websites, it's like, what do they want? What do they use? What do they need? And so it's really just putting them first, because that's your end person. And so that translates into products too, and thinking customer first. I mean, how are they going to interact with your item, your website, your whatever the heck you're making? And then also like testing stuff, you know, seeing how they truly do interact. And I don't mean for product-based businesses, I'm not going to say go out and like do surveys, but in places like craft fairs, like you're testing it, you're seeing what people react to, and you're seeing what their emotional response is and what they gravitate towards. And so just like noticing those things and really watching what people like and don't like. And in that sense, like a lot of times we're wrong about what's going to be a bestseller, you know, but you just, you see what people like and you go from there. So,
I've shared this on the show before. Before every trade show I went to exhibit at with my stationery line Kilp Designs back in the day, I would be like, oh, this one is going to be the bestseller of the show. And I was wrong like every single time.
Right? And I don't understand it. Like one of my like favorite designs hasn't sold at all. And I'm like, well, why not? But you just don't know.
I love what you were saying too about observations, and it's obviously easier to do in a person to person, you know, or in person market, like a craft show or a trade show, where we can see as people are walking by our booths or walking into our booths, what they're picking up, what they're asking about. Like, those are things that we need to be hyper aware of and pay attention to. And possibly if we're type A, like myself, take notes on, you know, as we're having those conversations or after we're having them. But I also think that we can do that in an online space too. We can look at our social content and see which posts are people engaging with. And when I say engage, I mean, what are they saving? What are they liking? What are they commenting on?
Yeah.
And I do, and I'm curious if you do the same. I mean, I know it's slightly different, but I look at that stuff. I look at those insights to see, okay, this is what people are drawn to. Let's do more of this, or let's reshare this again in 6 months. And do you do the same with your products?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, that's really true. A lot of my, so like when I post on social media on Instagram, I usually alternate between posting like a design from a product and then the actual photos of the product. Mm-hmm. And the designs that are reshared a lot are usually the products that actually do sell really well. So, and if something isn't reshared as often, then yeah, it's just, it doesn't resonate. And another thing that we can now do, because the internet is a creepy place, is with Google Analytics and all these other like softwares, you can watch people visiting your website and you can see what they're clicking on. And so it's creepy, but it's true. I mean, you can see if everyone clicks on that same thing on the homepage, then like that also tells you something too. So yeah, it's definitely helpful to like see, and also just using these metrics. I mean, a lot of us as creatives don't even, you don't want to look at these things, but yeah, you need to if you want to think like a business person. So
totally. And I would encourage folks to start small with it, you know, like just start paying attention to it and like take in the information before you actually take action on it. Just so you get comfortable with it too. Cause I agree.
Yeah, there's
a lot of people that, you know, sometimes the data overwhelms them. Some of us like me, like love it, but sometimes it overwhelms people. And so you got to find that balance for you too.
Yeah. Well, and even just doing things like polls on your Instagram story and stuff like that, like put up two different colorways of things and just like, you know, get a feel. Cause sometimes you'll see that like data is evenly split. And sometimes you'll see like 95% of people like the pink over the blue. And I like the blue, but you know, listen to the masses. So if you're ever not sure, like, yeah, definitely use the people already like in your audience and just see, because you never really know.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. What is coming up next for 20 some designs that you want to share with our audience?
So working on some new releases. I'm working on expanding my product line, hopefully some, you know, post-its and things like that coming soon. I'm working on covering more different topics and including more people in the messaging, and going to Noted next week. So that'll be fun. I guess by the time this airs, it's probably over. But yeah, that's all the big stuff I'm working on. So
that's a lot of fun stuff. That's awesome. Well, tell everyone where they can find you online, on social. We'll include it in the show notes too, but I always like to give you an opportunity.
Awesome. So my Instagram is at 20some.design. TikTok is the same. My website is www.20some.design. Basically anything 20some.design, you can find me out there. I try to make it easy.
That's great, Sadie. Well, thank you again for coming on today and sharing this great perspective and insight with all of us. I really appreciate it. And I know our audience does too. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm hoping that people gain some insights and can kind of think about their products a little differently and see where it takes them.
Absolutely. All right, friend, before we sign off, I want to emphasize something that Sadie said. She said, it's always customers first. When we know who we're talking to and who we're designing new products for, it is much easier to come up with creative ideas and market and sell that product. So I really want you to think about product development from the standpoint of who is your core audience and how can you best reach them through your products, your marketing on social or email, and generally how you talk about your brand, because all of this is intertwined and plays into one another. Thank you again to Sadie for joining me today. I hope you found today's episode helpful and that it got your wheels turning. Also, if you find yourself needing more support in your business, if you feel like you're working in a silo and you want a community of people to lean on, be sure to check out Proof to Product Labs, our community for product-based business owners. It is a special group, and it's a great mix of coaching and collaboration and community events so that you're supported as you build this business. We've got people in labs that sell all types of products. We're talking apparel and candles and stationery and embroidery kits and all sorts of things. And we've got people that have been in business for well over 10 years, as well as people just starting out. So there's something for everyone there. To learn more, head to prooftoproduct.com/labs. We will be working on marketing in Q3, and we're going to be focused on building out a 90-day marketing plan that you can use over and over again and just adjust. So it's a system that you can rinse and repeat. So again, head to prooftoproduct.com/labs. Thanks so much for listening until the end, and I will be back next week with a new episode.